Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, talking all things cricket, from club cricket to million-pound franchises to the Test Match Arena, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket. Hey up, Test Cricket is back. We're back with the Down at Third Man podcast, as always, each week. I don't think we really want to talk about the Test Match cricket right now, but we will in a little bit. We'll get on to it. With me today, I've got Jono. How are we, Jono?
Down it, fine leg. All right, mate. Sound, how are you?
I'm always good, mate. Always good, because I've got a day off work to go watch the 100, and it's due to rain. But oh well, so there's still a day off work, isn't it? So we've got Jono with us. Aid's not with us today, because sadly, he is still stuck at work. Brian wouldn't give him the day off. Boo, Brian, boo.
Boo, Brian. Worst man at Wedgwood Cricket Club. And that's fucking saying something.
I was going to say, there's plenty of competition, me included.
Sorry to all the people I like at Wedgwood Cricket Club.
So this is me and Jono, and then later on we are joined for a little 10-15 minutes by ex-England bowler, World Cup T20 winner, Ryan Sidebottom. So you'll get a little bit of a chat with Ryan Sidebottom ahead of this weekend's leak, past versus present day. Before we get into everything, though, as always, big shout-out to Woodstock, who support us. Get onto their website. Get using some of their kit. Benny Howell and Matt Carter keep doing great things with it in the 100. Third Man 25% off. Go and have a look at those guys. And while you're there, while you're on your computer, while you're looking at kit, why not go onto our Just Giving page, donate to our little charity fundraiser for cardiac risk in the young. Get yourself a bat sticker as well. We've got plenty of them. We're happy to deliver them. Or post them out or whatever you want. So give us a shout about that. Right, let's get it out of the way. First test match, first day, England versus India. And it all went a bit shit. England all out for 183. Day started, Roy Burns caught absolutely plumb in front by what I've got to say, to be fair, was an absolute beauty from Jasprit Bumrah. However, and I know I've always tried to avoid saying this, but when you look like Rory Burns, and to be honest, Dom Sibley look when batting, it feels like sometimes it's just a matter of time against the high-class bowlers before you're out. So Burns foul. Sibley and Crawley put on a bit of a stand before Sibley foul. Sibley didn't look particularly great. Crawley did well, got away with... Well, didn't get away with a review. There was a review from Kohli that Kohli was certain was caught behind, wasn't it, his five pad. Next ball, there was one that Kohli didn't think had hit the bat, but Rishabh Pant was sure it had. Turned out it was. He was out caught behind off Siraj. Root got 64, but batted well, but then got done by LBW by Fakur. Some would say maybe a bit of a sloppy shot. Some would say a great ball. Bairstow on his return, a bit of a shock return, I think, for many. LBW to Shami for 29. Dan Lawrence strangled one down leg. Horrible way to go. Duck off four balls. Butler, don't think I've seen anyone look so uncomfortable with the bat, if I'm honest, in Test Match cricket for a long time. Naught off 18. Sam Curran was 27, not out. Counter-attacking, couple of nice big blows in there, especially 1-6. It was beautiful. Ollie Robinson, not another duck from just three balls. Broad managed a lovely four off his first ball, but was then out on the third ball, LBW to Bumrah. I think it is the most plumb decision you will ever see, and it must be because Broad didn't bother reviewing it. And then Jimmy was out for one. England 183 all out. India finished the day 21 for none. Jono, I'm just going to let you come off your long run up and just hit it and hammer it. Come on, say what you got to say.
Well, where do I start? So many different things that I could start with. Right. Let's start with the bigger picture. So the bigger picture is that was one of the most inept batting performances I think I've seen by an England side. And there's been some pretty bad ones in the last,
two years to five years.
Yeah. But certainly under Root's tenure, that was, I would say, up there with the most lame and kind of gutless. I thought as an 11, they all looked completely at sea, probably other than Root. And even, I mean, it says something about the quality of Joe Root is. I didn't think he looked particularly good, and he still got 60-odd.
Yeah.
And I think that's just because he's probably the only, I'll move on to this later, the probably the only world-class player in our top six currently, and therefore natural talent and guile alone will get him out of certain situations, which is what you need. I thought we looked, so as I say, lame, gutless. I thought we looked severely undercooked. We looked like the away team, I thought. We looked seriously undercooked. What impact the cricket they've played or not played, I suppose, is immeasurable, really. With obviously the schedule, how it is, five test matches, this could be series over by the end of the third day on the first test match, in my eyes. It very much feels like we've gone to India, we're playing a five-game series in India, and we've been absolutely drilled on the first day, and we all secretly know that there's no coming back from it. And yeah, it's the first day at Trent Bridge in the middle of an English summer, and I'm very, very concerned. I thought they bowled okay. I thought they bowled well. They bowled full. They bowled in and around off stump, which was perfect for English conditions. I think they've got bowlers who are effective in English conditions. I thought Shami was very good yesterday. I thought he was the pick, personally. Although Bumrah probably got the rewards. I think Shami was probably the best of them. That for core is just... It is just an Indian Darren Stevens just nibbling it round. Yeah, just a poor day, a really, really poor day, a really disappointing day. Lots of people I could point the finger at, lots of things that I could point the finger at. I don't think the 100's done any of those players any good. I honestly, personally don't think that any of them should have been playing in it if they were in the test squad. It should have been just blanket out. They should have been preparing for this series for 3-4 weeks, maybe a couple of warm-up games. But then what kind of opposition would they play against in a warm-up game? Because everyone had been playing in the Blast and had been playing in the 100. So there'd have been no one to even play against almost. So the scheduling's all off. So that's one point. The preparation is completely off. There's another point. And then the third and final point is just skill and ability. And simply put, we are not good enough with a bat in our hands. And I'd personally, from what I saw last night, in terms of ability, our big strength was our bowlers could recover the game. And as much as it pains me to say, we've got two guys, one's knocking on the door of 40, the other one's past the best side of 30. They're not going to bail you out of games for much longer, guys. And when you've got Ben Stokes not playing, you've got Chris Wokes not playing, you're not playing the spinner, then that puts a lot of pressure on those two. And in a five-game series, I'm not sure how much they can carry you. But in my eyes, we've only got one world-class player playing in our top six currently, and that's Joe Root. And his talent and talent alone got him away with that.
Yeah, I think... You mentioned Stokes and Wokes missing. I think they're big, big misses, obviously. But it does change the fact that even with those two playing, you're not scoring. Even with Stokes and Wokes, I reckon you don't score more than probably 250 unless one of them has a really good day because of how poor everything around them is. And I've seen lots of people straight away jumping on the 100. Oh, it's all the 100's fault. I don't think it is. Obviously, it doesn't help that a lot of them have been playing white ball cricket. But then at the same time, you look at, I think Kohli hasn't played a first-class game that wasn't a test match since something like 2012 or something bizarre like that. I think there's probably so many factors in it. Scheduling, as you say, preparation, the standard of the county championship, which maybe I think people need to accept that actually it isn't very good. I mean, I think that's pretty clear when you look at how are the players who do so well in the county championship do not only, fair enough, you might say, well, they're going to struggle abroad when they go to, say, India or Sri Lanka. They're going to struggle there. It's going to take them time. But when you look at how they perform in England, I think it's fair to say that they just can't cut it, or a lot of them can't cut it against either the best batsmen or the best bowlers. And I think in the main, it's probably the bowlers. So It's just one of them things where I think there's so many things wrong that we need to sort, and I'm just not sure how quickly or how well we do that. I think short term fixes, you can look to improve the preparation. If you're looking ahead towards the Ashes, you can look at ways of improving that. I think you could look at it, probably the selection. Is the selection right? Is continuing to pick people who've in reality failed? If you're averaging less than 30 after over 10 test matches, you are failing as a test match batsman. Do they go back to old heads like Milan and Vince possibly, and people who got chastised for averaging 35 after 10 games? Actually, do you want to go back to them and say, you know what, they're probably more of an answer than a young lad who's averaging 20 odd? It's a difficult one, but is that a short-term fix, or is that just pointless? Our short-term fix is pointless at this point. I really do not know. What do you think, Jono? Do you think there's anything we can do short-term, or is it all long-term and the ECB maybe pulling the finger out their arse and changing things?
I don't know. You can't replace a lack of talent, mate, unfortunately. So that's a difficult one. Right, what do you do? What do you do to replace talent? You can't. So ultimately, I don't think we've got enough talent in the team right now to compete with the likes. So India could field two sides, in my opinion, that are better than us. I think Australia could probably comfortably beat us right now at home. And I think, well, I don't know. Talent's got a big way to say in it. Lack of form, a lack of preparation in the longer format. We've not been very good in the longest format for a while now. And world-class players, in my eyes, win games for you. And Jimmy Anderson has not got that long to go. Stuart Broad has not got that long to go. And other than that, I believe that our only world-class players are Joe Root currently in that side. So that's a worry.
Yeah, I think you're pretty spot on there. I don't think there's much arguing to be done about it. It's something that we maybe just need to accept and look at long term. What changes can we make to make this fit go better, improve things, and not have this problem again. But yeah, we're not going to deep dive into the test match so really yet, because obviously still 4 days to go. Anything could happen. It might turn out that the England lineup is spot on. They might have a miracle few days. It's unlikely, but it might happen. So we'll talk about the test match probably in more detail next week before the second test match. What do I dare ask? What you think will happen from here, Jono? Or is that something, or do you not even want to contemplate it?
Bowlers with a valiant effort. If I had to make a prediction now after day one, I'd say bowlers to make a valiant effort to get us back in the game. India 300 all out, England 200 all out, India chasing, what would that be? 100 and something to win the game, knock them off one or two down.
Yeah, screams of probably the England New Zealand, if anything, I would say. I think these two series might just be proof that we are nowhere near where we maybe hoped and thought we might be, test match wise. I think victories against, let's be honest, Pakistan and West Indies at home aren't great nations, and we were almost a little bit lucky, I dare say, to get past last year. And against Sri Lanka, who are a very poor cricket test match nation at the moment, I think, well, cricketing nation, if we're being really honest about Sri Lanka, I think have glossed over, papered over cracks that have deep set in the England team and probably won't be solved quickly, but hey-ho. Something for us moaning about for the next however many years, no doubt. Right, I guess the other major sort of goings on at the moment in cricket is, of course, the 100. Still lots of really good cricket going on. Last night, Birmingham Phoenix won a great game against Oval Invincibles. Will Smead did well. Moeen Ali did really, really well. Put Tom Curran around the park a bit. And Chris Benjamin again started at the end. Real good find he's turned out to be. London Spirit in the men's are pretty much dreadful. Got battered by Northern Superchargers a couple of days ago. Looking at the tables, unsurprisingly at the top. In the men's, Birmingham Phoenix on 6 points, level with Trent Rockets, but they've played a game less. They lost their first game last week. Manchester Originals in third, with 5 points, they've only played four games. They're on the same points as the Superchargers and the Invincibles, but they've both played a game more. Southern Brave have now won a couple of games, but they're still next to bottom. Welsh Fire, after starting with 2 from 2, have now lost 2 from 2 and have dropped down the table. And I say, London Spirit lost 4 games, and their only point came from the game the other week that got rained off without a ball bowled. And then over in the women's, Southern Brave are top, they're unbeaten. Northern Superchargers in second, they've only lost the one game. Oval Invincibles in third, having won 3 and lost 2. And then just outside of the sort of the qualification top three is Welsh Fire, Trent Rockets and London Spirit, all on 4 points. Manchester Originals, bottom of the league, have not won a game yet. Their only point also coming from a rain off. So the 100's been good. It's been still great games of cricket, even with obviously the likes of Root missing. But I think if anything, to be honest with you, I think that just shows that after the Test match players, other than probably Butler, none of the actual Test match players, I would dare say, and I might offend a few people here, are actually particularly that good in T20 or the 100 style cricket. I think it'd be fair to say. Even Ben Stokes hadn't done much. I know, obviously, that might be as much to do with the injury and lack of preparation and sort of his mental well-being, which is obviously why he's took a break from cricket. But would you think it's fair to say, Jono, and this is something I think that maybe, looking at what we just said about Test match cricket, do we think it'd be fair to say that maybe it is, in future, sort of having white ball cricketers and having red ball cricketers maybe the way to go for sort of, especially someone like England and possibly maybe even the likes of Australia, might be the way to go to ensure that they are competitive in both formats, all three formats?
Are you asking me whether I think that's the way?
I'm saying, is that the way it's going to end up going more than anything? Because I think personally that's the way it will end up going and might be the way we have to go to be competitive. I think India are lucky in the fact that they have 1 billion people to pick from. So the chances of having 11 or say 5 or 6 players even that are good at all three formats is a lot higher than us or Australia. I think we're only ever going to probably have 2 or 3 in reality that are actually that good. You look at Stokes, you look at maybe Butler, maybe Root, but probably and even Stokes, I guess, is a maybe when you look at T20 cricket, as being proper world-class in the top 5 or 6 players. You know what I mean? I don't see many players like that. So I wonder if that's maybe the way to go, possibly.
I wouldn't have said that's... Well, I think that's the way it might go, but it's not the way I think it should go. If you look at... Like, I don't think that's the way to produce world-class cricketers. I think if you look at the best players that we have, have that ability to play multiple formats. Joe Root is our best Test match player. He also just so happens to basically be one of, if not our best one-day player in my eyes, because he plays a very important role there. I still think Joe Root is more than capable of playing a decent hand in our 2020 team. It's just that the 2020 team is so good and has so many options, his role just doesn't quite fit. Josh Butler, I think, is an incredible white ball player. I think he's a capable red ball player. Ben Stokes is a more than capable white ball cricketer, and I think he's a very, very good red ball cricketer. So you look at, in my eyes, like our three best players there, and they play across multiple formats. You look at India's best players, Kohli, Rahane, Sharma, KL Rahul is a good player. I think he's been out this side. Pant is a really good player. Bumrah. I mean, not many bowlers I've just spoken about there, by the way. I know Stokes is an all-rounder, but you notice I've not spoken about bowlers there because we work it a little bit differently because we've got the two at the older age of this, two at the older end of the age spectrum. But Bumrah, red ball, white ball. Shami, white ball, red ball. Jadeja, Ashwin. Ashwin's pretty capable with the white ball in his hand. I know they tend to tend to go with the wrist spinners, don't they, in white ball.
Yeah.
But he's more than capable with a white ball in his hand. Talking about world-class players there, India, in my eyes, could play this 11 that are playing now with a white ball and still be very, very competitive. England can't do that. Which is why I think it will end up for us going that way. However, I just believe that that reduces the lack of world-class cricketers that we are likely to produce, personally. Yeah.
No, and I therefore agree.
Dilutes the quality of cricketer that we are going to produce. I mean, this is going off on a tangent slightly, but if you're a young lad growing up nowadays, what, and you absolutely love your cricket and you want to be a professional cricketer, you want to play for England, what team do you want to play in? And I'd pose that. That's a great question to pose, because I'll tell you right now, when I was growing up, and still now, feel like I'm still growing up, if I wanted to play for England, I'd want to play Test match cricket for England. That is the ultimate, playing Test match cricket for England. And for me, I'm just not sure. I don't know. Is it almost like an error from the success that we've had, the World T20 success we had about 10-11 years ago, and also the World Cup success over the last couple of years, and potential more 2020 success coming up. Is that a problem of our success there, that's all that a generation of people have grown up knowing? They've not known us as this top test team. They've now known us as this white ball team. Whereas, like, the peak of me watching England was watching that 2005 team.
Yeah.
And then Strauss taking over and being the best team in the world and going and winning in Australia, and absolutely hammering Australia in Australia. That, to me, is like the ultimate. So
yeah, I think you maybe hit the nail on the head there, because I know Kent got a bit of criticism earlier in the week for saying that their aim as a county was now to be producing players to play for England and in the top franchise tournaments, because they're the highest level of cricket now is England Test match and playing IPL, etc. And a lot of people jumped on it, said that's not right, that's not what county cricket's for, they're there to produce county cricketers and England cricketers, it doesn't matter about franchises. But as much as I'm with you, when I was a kid, all you wanted to do was play for England in a Test match, because that was what everyone believed was the best cricket, that was what England were good at, and that's what you saw on TV. I think as many kids would probably, well, I think for sure, as many kids would want to play for the England white ball teams and play with Josh Butler and Owen Morgan and Jofra Archer and them, as they would want to play in the Test match team with Joe Root. And I think that's just how sort of the world of cricket's gone, as much as English cricket. I hate to tell people, but I don't think any kid or many kids growing up now would say, if you said to them, yeah, you want to play for England, but who else do you want to play with outside of international cricket? I don't think many of them would turn around and say Lancashire or say Warwickshire. I think quite a lot of them would now start to say either 100 teams or IPL teams. I know Rajasthan Royals owner speaks about how actually people would be very, very surprised by how much the IPL is popular with English kids, and how much of the people watching and getting in, like, involved on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram with Rajasthan Royals and IPL teams is actually young English kids, and how it's really popular with them and people don't realise it. And I think maybe that's just the way the world's going, the cricket's going, that everyone, that there's now a more of a preference towards white ball. And I think, sadly, that's hitting how strong the players are coming through in red ball.
I mean, it's a total other side point here, but I would have franchise cricket in, I would have franchise cricket in this country. I would ditch the Blast. I would ditch counties playing the Blast, and I would turn it into a franchise system. I know it's been
KP, I'd love you.
I know it's been spoken about in the past, but that in my eyes is one way to improve the standard. Because, like, I mean, just look at the Royal. I mean, it always was going to be this year, but we've gone for the franchise of the 100, and I understand why. But if it was me, and if you didn't do the 100 again, whether the 100 is here to stay or what, I don't know. But if you do the 100 again, then that becomes kind of like your franchise cricket. But then I believe that we're playing too much all the cricket for it to all fit. And I know that's COVID related, but I would say that one answer to this issue would be to ditch the 2020 blast, create a franchise tournament that has its own set aside time in the year, time in the calendar. So we've got distinct times to play county championship cricket. We've got distinct times to play our blast, our franchise 2020. And what I'd do is I'd amalgamate the counties. That's what I'd do. And they can build a squad from those counties, very much like they do in Australia. Not, I don't know so much about the IPL, but I know in Australia you've got all of these different regions, and essentially what they do is they'll play out of one ground, and it's basically like a combination of maybe one, two, sometimes three different regions basically cobbling a squad together, because not everyone's going to play 2020 out of a squad, do you know what I mean? So yeah. Why not improve the standard and amalgamate two squads and make a better team? So if you had maybe like Durham and Yorkshire, like, because like the Northern Supercharged in the 100 is basically Durham, yeah. Yorkshire, and that's them, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what's sort of having like a Northern 2020 franchise team, and they rotate, and if the grounds wanted to moan that they're not going to get the money in, well, what's up with rotating them between Headingley and Durham, and then some of the outgrounds if you wanted the outgrounds as well? I don't see it. And then splitting the money, because I guarantee more money would flow through a tournament like that than it would through than what it is currently. But then again, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know the finances behind all of these things, do I? So.
No, none of us do, I don't think. But I think that's the thing. I think the 100 was only created because they know full well that they need we need franchise cricket in some form to both improve the standard and boost the popularity of cricket over here. I think something that people just need to accept, 18 counties does not work in that regard, and the blast does not work in that regard. And I hate to tell people that, but that's how it is. And so they made the 100 because they didn't want to upset the counties and get rid of the blast. They didn't want to get rid of their T20 tournament. Felt like there wasn't room for two T20 tournaments. They've had to come up with something different. I think, really, as much as I've enjoyed the 100, and actually I've quite liked the format, which I didn't think I would.
Yeah, so right. And I think a lot of people have.
I still think maybe long term, just because of international tournaments, and I can't see the 100 format really being played around the world. I think maybe long term, in some way, the 100 sort of almost transforms into just a T20 tournament. And as you say, that becomes sort of the main tournament, whether the blast then exists or whether it just gets rid of. Or I think long term, and I know people won't like it, but I think it's guaranteed that there is not going to be 18 first class counties. Long term, I think the 100 will go up to probably 10 teams. I wouldn't be shocked to see a southwestern team come in that sort of keeps happy the likes of Gloucestershire and Somerset. And then I wouldn't be surprised to see another team appear, maybe East Midlands way, or even possibly like having a team in that's maybe Scotland, or I dare even say Ireland, and having them in the 100, and maybe, as I say, transforming the 100 into a T20 tournament. And then long term, the counties probably go, and you end up a bit like the women have now, whereby you've got, as you say, these franchises that are in certain regions, and you make your teams up from sort of there, and that's how it works. And because you have less teams, you probably then have less matches, but it's better quality, it's easier to schedule, it's easier for people to follow, it's easier for people who aren't living in a first class county. So us in Staffordshire, we then go and support, I don't know, whichever one you want. You maybe don't call them Manchester Originals, then you maybe call them Northwest Summit or other, or I don't know, but I think that's the way cricket will end up going. I think it's just a matter of when, not if, personally. Right, shall we go on to happier things?
Please.
Shall I do something happy before we have our little chat with Ryan Sidebottom? And I know you're going to absolutely love this, but England might be shit at red ball cricket, but we are good at white ball cricket.
We are.
Someone who is pretty good at red ball cricket, but is absolutely, it seems, dog shit at white ball cricket, is the Australians.
Yes.
After struggling against the West Indies, they are currently 2-0 down in a 5-match T20 series against Bangladesh. Jono, yes. Take it away, because I feel like you're going to absolutely love reveling in the fact the Aussies have been shit.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched any of it because I've got no idea. Is it been on BT? I've got no idea if it's even been
yeah, on BT. I know the Aussies can't even watch it, mate. So, wow. Says it all, I think.
Yeah, fucking cricket doesn't help itself sometimes, does it? but I've been keeping up to date with the scores. And I will say this. Bangladesh is not as easy a prospect to go and travel to as it was 10, 15 years ago when it was literally like playing the dog and dick. and I know it's not, well, certainly on paper, I wouldn't call it a full-strength Australian team, but I love nothing more in reveling in the absolute destitution of Australians in general and also Australian cricket. So, yeah. Well done, yeah. Lads. Well played. Well batted. Well bowled. It's clearly been a real success. Matthew Wade, who really grinds my gears anyway. but yeah, most enjoyed watching those scores roll in. Bangladesh are dangerous at home, mate, and always capable of an upset. So always got to be wary.
Yeah. I've got to say, just looking quickly at the scorecards, it's clear to see Mitch Marsh seems to be, fair play to him, seems to be an all right number three. But in a particular, he's very much, I guess you would say, of a David Milan ilk, or possibly worse, really, in terms of strike rate. I mean, I'm saying he's done well. He's got 45 at a strike rate of 107, batting three. It's not the greatest. Moises Enriquez did a bit of a reasonable job for them, but as much as I say it's Ashton Turner, namesake, not doing much for him. Matthew Wade, say, not great. Disappointed, I've got to say, in Josh Felipe, because I've really rated him whenever I've seen him, but he's certainly not flying, I think it's fair to say. Struggling to get runs. And yeah, when Mitch Stark is worryingly looking like one of your better batsmen, you're not going to have a good time of it. And I think the T20 World Cup, they're going to struggle big time. I don't see Australia challenging. I think it's between England, India, in the West Indies, with New Zealand and probably Pakistaners outside shouts. But I could see Australia being the sort of team that goes out quite early and maybe even loses out to someone like Afghanistan. And maybe the big shock loss, because I just do not see, other than Mitchell Stark bowling absolute bombs and possibly obviously Warner coming back in, if he's fit, I'm sure he could maybe be a difference maker at the top of the order for him. I just don't see him challenging in the T20 World Cup, and we're not going to complain about that, are we, Jono?
We're not, mate, no, but you've always got to remember they are Australian, so therefore they've probably got something crafty, potentially illegal up their sleeve at all times, so must be wary and must be treated with the utmost caution.
Of course, mate.
But yeah, Warner coming back into the side will be a big one for them. I mean, if it was down to me, I mean, I don't know whether they generally pick Smith for 2020s, but I'd have Smith in regardless.
Said he's not going to play any, Tanti, I think, more or less. Basically said, yeah, he's a no-goer.
But I'd have him in if it was me. Shame to see, really, because I think their franchise cricket is one of the best. I much, much prefer, by the way, watching the Big Bash than I do the IPL.
Yep, so
I don't know what it is, but I really, really do enjoy the Big Bash. And there's some seriously good cricketers, young cricketers, playing the Big Bash year in, year out. Same as you, really. There's some names in there that I really expected to really advance. I was looking forward to watching Josh Felipe in the IPL before he pulled out or he got injured or whatever he got. So I'm surprised he's not gone wild, but like I say, Bangladesh is not as an easier place as it was, especially with half a team.
Yeah. Just on Big Bash League, I'll just give a shout out to friend of the pod, Peter Atsoglu, signed for Pierce Scorchers for next BBL, so he'll be turning out in Orange next year. Think he's very excited by it. Had a little chat with him the other day, and we'll be getting him on in the build-up to the Big Bash League to help us preview this year's coming Big Bash, and hopefully might even be able to get him on a couple of times during the Big Bash, just to let us know how it's going and what it's like. So that should be good fun. Right, we're going to go now to our, well, we're going to go first go to our Woodstock advert, so you'll get all the info on Woodstock, and then we're going to go to our interview with ex-England bowler, World T20 World Cup winning, 5 county championships wins, legend, great hair, great nickname, did a little bit of ice skating too that my mum will probably remember him better for than his cricket, our interview with Ryan Sidebottom. So we'll be back in 2 seconds with that.
Looking for a new cricket equipment partner for yourself or your club can sometimes be tricky. With so many options to choose from, how do you make the right choice? When you want quality, value and service, there really is only one place to start. For more than a decade, Woodstock Cricket have been producing award-winning, high-performance cricket bats from their Shropshire workshop. Matched with their classy soft goods, luggage and accessories, Woodstock Cricket really do tick all the boxes. Get in touch with Woodstock Cricket and find out why many loyal clubs, players and international customers can't be wrong at info@woodstockcricket.co.uk.
Hi guys, we're really lucky today to have a brilliant guest with us. We've got an ex-England bowler, but also a World T20 winning England bowler. He's also won 5 county championships at Yorkshire and Nottinghamshire. And he's also probably quite well known for doing a little bit of ice skating and having one of the best nicknames ever. And that is Ryan Sidebottom. How are we, Ryan?
Good, awesome. How, everyone? Yeah, I'm great. Thanks. How are you doing?
I'm good, Tor. And Jono's good. He's just had a power cut in the parish, so he's getting a bit worried he wouldn't get the chance to speak to you.
Bless. Has he not put the 50p in the machine to get his electric back up?
No staff, still confident, mate. We're still on the meter, you see, so... Rumours are part of the estate still on dial-up somewhere.
Part of it, or 90% of it, mate. I've seen some people.
Is he reversing charges as well for the phone?
So I think it's only fair we start with the nickname Sexual Chocolate. Please explain where Sexual Chocolate came from.
Oh, bloody hell, honestly. So when I first sort of was in and around the Yorkshire setup, Darren Goff and Craig White started calling me Sexual Chocolate. I was only sort of 18, 19 at the time, but I used to have hair twice as long, and I used to love all my stupid products, you know, thinking, oh, I'm playing for Yorkshire County Cricket Club, I'm the absolute bollocks. And I used to put loads of product, and it used to look like greasy and frizzy. And I don't know if anyone's seen, but there's a film coming to America with Eddie Murphy. And on that film, there's a band called Sexual Chocolate, and they've all got long, frizzy, like greasy, curly hair. So hence the name Sexual Chocolate, and it stuck with me pretty much ever since, for the last 20 odd years or however many years I've since played. But I mean, I suppose it's all fun, isn't it? You know, when you've got a last name like Sidebottom, you're generally a pun for plenty of jokes in the dressing room. And also fielding on the boundary. You know, I've had so many, you know, Leo Sayer, Sideshow Bob. I mean, I've had them all. I mean, having long hair, so I'm kind of used to it. So, look, it's one of those things, and I don't mind it. You know, I find it quite amusing, actually.
I just can't imagine being that county championship batsman who was stood ready to face you, and you've got Darren Goff at slip shouting, come on, Sexual Chocolate.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, the lads generally call me Siddy. They call me Chocolate. They won't call me Sexual Chocolate, just in case there's any ladies in the vicinity. But it was just, you know, more just plenty of fun. But I mean, Goffey, you know, absolute legend of a bloke. You know, he was one of the first guys that got me my first sponsorship with Duncan Fernley back in the day. You know, would do anything for anyone in the dressing room. And he was kind of my hero growing up. You know, watching how he performed in one day cricket and the skills that that he had. He was brilliant. And sort of the character, you know, he kind of rubbed off on me a little bit. You know, watching him perform, I always wanted to go out there and sort of emulate him and, you know, just give it everything, always try my best. And you know what, enjoy. You know, I'm very fortunate to play for England and, you know, travel the world, but try and enjoy it as much as I possibly can. You know, you have bad days in any walk of life, but, you know, always have a smile on my face and have a bit of banter. And over time, I used to have a bit of banter with the crowd and, you know, nick some kids' chips and they'd start crying and, you know, just having plenty of fun. You know what, I'm doing something that I absolutely love and I've been very fortunate. So, you know, he's one of the first guys that sort of taught me how to, you know, go out there and perform.
Yeah, everyone loves Goffey, I think it's fair to say. Love
not
listening
a bad person to learn off. Not a bad person to learn off.
I mean, what about his commentary, though, on Talk Sport, his football? I mean, what do you reckon to that? He's actually not bad. Being a thick Yorkshireman from Barnsley, he actually comes across all right.
He does. He comes across all right. And as you say, that it's the football that surprised me. Because I'll be honest, there's a few people on Talk Sport, like Simon Jordan, who sometimes I listen to a fig. Nah, what are you on about? But to be fair to Goffey, I've got to say, no, 9 times out of 10, I must agree with him, which is a surprise.
It must be something I reckon it's something to do with the Yorkshire accent, you know, because every time he starts with the Yorkshire accent, and there's a couple of others, I listen to a couple of podcasts with Mark Crossley on, and as soon as that, like, Barnsley, John Parkin, the Yorkshire accent comes out, I just can't all but giggle, and I'm gone then. That's it. I can't take it seriously. I'm just giggling. I'm done.
Yeah, John Parkin's good as well, is he? Comes up, he's good. He's very good. Very funny. Very dry.
Yeah.
Another Stoke legend.
Let's not talk about
Stoke
that.
Stoke lads.
So, obviously, the reason we've got you on today is because you're going to be playing at the weekend in the league past versus present game.
Yeah.
Club cricket to us is massive. We love talking about club cricket. We play club cricket. We're not great at it, but we played. And just wonder, sort of, how was it that you got into club cricket and what's your relationship like with club cricket? Has it been sort of an ever-present throughout your career?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up, my father played for Yorkshire. He proed back in the day, you didn't play many weekends. So all the Yorkshire first 11 players proed at various clubs. And we lived in Huddersfield. So my dad played all Huddersfield League cricket stuff, where, you know, when he wasn't representing Yorkshire. And so I travelled around with him. He was at Holmfirth for a number of years. So all my age group stuff was in Holmfirth. So yeah, I grew up with you know, your local league cricket, village cricket. I absolutely loved it. You know, where do you get your, at the end of the day, where do you get your test players from and your county cricketers? Well, they have to start somewhere, and it's your local league cricket team. You know, growing up and spending hours and hours, you know, down at my local club and you know, having Pop and Chris and just going on the field next door and playing all day and then, you know, maybe watching my dad for a little bit. And you kind of get the bug. And yeah, I've always tried to, you know, promote league cricket. I love league cricket. It's where I came from, how I learnt my trade, as it were. And I've had so many wonderful days at cricket grounds, not just playing, but just, you know, watching the family and you know, enjoying, you know, what they're doing. So for me, it's a huge part of anyone's life. You know, you generally, each team, you get, you know, the woman that does all the teas, the groundsman that's there, been there for 300 years, and he, you know, he's still plodding along. And I absolutely love league cricket. I mean, when I was sort of playing full-time for Yorkshire and a little bit for England, I would always, if I came back from injury, I would always go back and play league cricket. But I wouldn't be a mercenary. I wouldn't go back and, you know, charge him a fortune. I'd actually, my stipulation was a curry, a takeaway. All I wanted was enough money to, on the way home, to either call off at the Chinese takeaway or the curry house and get myself a takeaway. And that, for me, was enough. I wasn't bothered for taking money. It was more the fact I love playing. You know, you go back and you have that camaraderie and the team spirit and, you know, how I've always loved, you know, going into dressing rooms and mixing with that environment, because you always get one knobhead, you always get one thick lad, you know, you always get one who plays the practical jokes, you get one that always comes late because he's had too many the night before. And, you know, and that's what I love about, you know, league cricket. It's absolutely fantastic and, you know, so many fond memories.
Well, some of the curry houses around here, mate, it cost us less than a tenner to get you on board. That'd be absolutely worldly.
Honestly, count me in. Chinese takeaway curry on the way home after a couple of pints is nothing better after you play the day's cricket when the weather's like this as well. It's absolutely.
I'll get the Royal Baltic to get the red corks out ready for when Johnny tries signing. Yeah. So, speaking of about something like your best moments watching cricket and playing cricket, you've won 5 county championships, you've won a T20 World Cup, you've debuted at Lord's, you've got a test match hat-trick. What, and been on Dancing on Ice, as Jim Amy's our listener likes to keep reminding me for some bizarre reason. What has actually been the highlight? What moment is it that when you look back, like, sort of stands out and you think, wow, that I'll always, always think back to that?
Well, it's funny because when I went on Dancing on Ice, all of a sudden no one gave an absolute monkeys that I played cricket for 22 years. It was almost like forgotten, which was really bizarre. But I would have to say, one, probably winning the T20 World Cup. When you have dreams and aspirations growing up of, you know, wanting to play cricket and representing your country. So to win a global tournament and to be part of that team, obviously, is, you know, really special and something I'll always remember and never, ever forget. But I think, look, I've been so fortunate to win trophies and competitions a lot, you know, throughout my career. But I would say the best memories are the wins and the celebrating the wins in the pub afterwards and doing a pub crawl and, you know, meeting all the fans and having a drink with the fans. And for me, those are the kind of memories, those are the number one things that I'll always remember, is the celebrations afterwards. Because, you know, throughout people's careers, you know, of course you want to win things, but I suppose it's the people along the way that I've met and the team camaraderie and the spirit and, you know, the banter, you know, the team banter, you know, turning up. When I was at Yorkshire, we had someone called Jack the Snipper, a prankster in the dressing room who would snip your socks, your underpants, everything. You know, you'd have a terrible day in the field. You'd bowl 25 overs, gone for a million, and you just want to get home and just, like, hope the next day comes around as quick as possible. And you would go to put your underpants on and your meat and two veg would be hanging out because a snipper had cut your underpants and holes in your socks, your shoelaces out in your shoe, so you end up having to go home in your trainers, and just those kind of memories, which, you know, I'll always sort of remember and cherish the moments where you have, you know, ups and downs and you know, even the losses, you know, the losses, and you get that togetherness, and you, being old school, you go out and have a few pints and you'd sort of kind of forget about it. You know, it doesn't mean that, you know, you're not happy with your performance, but I think those are the memories that I'll always remember. But of course, you know, the World Cup, something very special that is part of history and I'll always remember and cherish.
Yeah, brilliant. I think we all remember sort of watching it and seeing Collingwood lifting the trophy, and brilliant, brilliant moment. And hopefully,
it's funny
again.
You should say that, because when we bowled pretty well, and we, you know, we kept them down to a under 150, which we tried to do. Me and Graham Swan, didn't watch one single ball of our innings. We were absolutely shitting our pants. And we were both in the toilet, in the dressing room, just chatting to each other, just like watching the world go by. And you could kind of hear in the background the noise of, you know, when we hit a boundary or a 4 or a 6. So when it got quite near, we went back out. But I promise you, I've never, ever been as nervous in my entire life when we're batting. I thought, if it's going to end up me going out there, we're definitely not winning. So it was all good fun.
I'm hoping you won't be that nervous on Sunday. I'm hoping it won't.
I will be. Honestly, because everybody will be chomping the bit to smash me all over. I'm a bit too old now, but I'm really excited for Sunday. I really am. Looking forward to going back to league, and you know, it's great. I can and put a few little bits back to you know, local league cricket.
So, what was it like, sort of thinking back to when you played for league? What was it like playing for league and sort of other sort of local cricket clubs when it came to coming back from injuries or trying to get that little bit of game time? What was it actually like?
Well, yeah. I like I said, I really enjoyed it because you have so many characters, and, you know, it is quite a grounding sort of scenario back and your local league team, and the lads take the mick out of you and they might say, oh, you bowled crap last week for Yorkshire, or you were rubbish, what were you doing, and stuff like that. And I always enjoyed that side of it. And yeah, when I got the opportunity, I was playing for Nottinghamshire at the time, and they wouldn't allow me to play because of some ruling that they had. So I sort of shopped around, and league said, you know, we would love to have you, and I jumped at the chance, and it was great. I had a fantastic day, brilliant day. It was absolutely awesome. I was really well looked after by the whole club, and we managed to win as well. It was like a really tight game, if I recall. I think we might have got bowled them out for 110, and we were chasing 110. We got them 9 down or 8 down or something ridiculous. So it was a cracking game to be involved in as well. So yeah, when league sort of asked me to go back, would I be having this past versus present players get together? I jumped at the chance. You know, I was free with it in the diary, and it's always nice to give back as much as you can, and I've always tried to do that as much as possible. And so I'm really looking forward to Sunday. But anyone that's listening, please don't smash me all over. Give me a chance to get loose.
Well, I was just going to say, what should we expect bowling and batting wise from you on Sunday? Are we going to see fireworks or
entertainment?
Batting wise, I had a bat in my hand for God knows how long, so I might as well bat right handed. But bowling wise, I can still swing them a little bit. Not any great pace, but you know what? It's about the day. I'm just going to have fun and enjoy it, and you know, help out the club as much as I possibly can. But yeah, you know, we'll see. There's always some young whippersnapper who's been watching Joss Butler on telly playing his scoops and reverse sweeps, and I'm sure he'll want to get one up on me. So I'm looking forward to that too.
It's out there in the public domain now, those words. So you know what's coming next, don't you?
I know. I do anyway.
Leek's a great club, and I know they've got lots of stuff going on Sunday that me and John will talk about a bit later on in the pod. But it should be a great day. But before we let you go, Ryan, there is one thing we always get our guests to do, and that's a little quick fire round. Now, you're lucky today, because normally it's as many questions as we can fit in about 90 seconds, but we've made it a little bit shorter this week. So Jono has got 10 questions for you. And basically just answer as quick as you can, mate, as the basis. Okay. Jono, are you ready, Jono?
I'm ready, mate. Are you ready?
So, Jono. Right then, starting in 3, 2, 1, go for it.
Right, okay, Ryan, red ball or white ball?
Red ball.
Best bowling figures?
7 for 41 or 47 against New Zealand.
Nice. High score?
High score, 63. Useless.
International debut?
Lords, 2001 against Pakistan.
Not a bad debut. Favourite tour?
Favourite tour? Oh, wow. I would have to say Australia.
Favourite person to go on tour with?
Favourite person? Oh, Graham Swan. What a character. Great lad.
Oh, I had a feeling that might have been coming. After game drink?
After game drink, large pint of lager, as cold as possible.
Like it. Best friend in cricket?
Best friend, it is James Middlebrook, who is now a first-class umpire.
Nice. Favourite ground?
Favourite ground? Lords, obviously, for the history, but I'm going to say Scarborough. You can walk back to the hotel, fish and chips, and there's about 10 pubs on the way back, so that's me.
I've got a lot of time. Best player played with?
Best player played with? I would have to say Darren Layman.
Nice. Best player played against?
I would say the great Sachin Tendulkar or Jack Callis.
And finisher, proudest moment in cricket?
Test hat-trick, just because my mum and dad were there. My dad never ever watched, and he came up to New Zealand to come and watch, and he was there for my hat-trick, so proudest moment.
Top man. Turner, that's me.
That's you.
Awesome.
And that's us. So a big, big thanks, Ryan.
Oh, absolute pleasure, guys. No worries at all.
We can't wait to hear how Sunday goes. I'm sure it'll be a great day. And
fingers crossed for me.
Yeah, let's just hope no young whippersnappers get a bit too big for the boots.
Yeah, I'll have to get the briefing out ready for when I start. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Plenty of deep eats.
Correct, yeah.
Cheers for coming on, Ryan. It's been a pleasure, mate.
Cheers. All the best. Absolute pleasure. Cheers. Take care. Cheers, no worries, Ryan. Guys. All the best.
Thanks, mate.
Take care.
So cheers for Ryan for joining us for 10, 15 minutes this morning. Great to speak to you. Great bloke. Great chat. I'm sure you'll all enjoy listening to Sexual Chocolate and his views on cricket and club cricket and some couple of his little stories. And as we said, the reason we had him on is all because Leek have got a big, big event this weekend, their Legends Day, past 11 versus present 11 day. They've got loads going on. They've got junior cricket in the morning with their under-13s. Who were top of the league, I believe, were a couple of games to go, so a big game for them in the morning. Then it all really kicked off, I guess, properly in the afternoon. They've got two T20 games going on, one at 1 o'clock, one at 4 o'clock. They're going to have a current 11 made up of sort of current first team, second team and development players, playing against a couple of past 11 sides. So some names from the past 11s, I'm sure some of you'll recognise, Jamie Cullerton, who also played a little bit for Wedgies, Colin Dearden, Dave Fearn, Dave Ferries, Rob Hayden, Rob King, Brian Maller, Mitch Spencer, John Tweets, Rich Ogden, plenty of names in there. And of course, Ryan Sidebottom himself, having played against Leesett back in 2009 when he was playing for Notts, are going to be all playing. They've been supported by Pete Wilshaw and JS Sports, so they're going to have some different coloured kits on that I'm sure will make it look a bit more pleasing on the eye. Got Malcolm Edge and John Reid umpiring. I'm sure they'll have bits of music and stuff going on. Obviously, they'll have plenty as well going on off the pitch. So they've got Project Donut there, selling donuts from 1 till 6. If you haven't had Project Donut donuts, trust me, they are amazing, really nice. And they've got the barbecue going as always with the burgers and hot dogs on the go. They're going to have a raffle as well, so anyone with any last-minute prizes, give them a shout so that you can get it into the raffle. And, as of course, the bar will be open, and they want to give a shout-out to Onua Foods or Kerrygold Pilgrim's Choice, who kindly agreed to sponsor the match. But, yeah, should be good fun. Oh, I must mention as well that one of the members of staff from Onua is going to take part and going to play for one of the teams. And no one really seems to have a clue as to whether he's played cricket before or whether he's going to be a complete newbie. So that could be interesting if Sidebottom's coming in and swinging it around corners to a lad who doesn't know which end of the bat to hold. But yeah, it should be a really good day down on Sunday at Leek. So get yourselves down if you've got nothing else to do. I'll be honest, if England don't make it to day five and my tickets to Trent Bridge are useless, then I'll be down at Leek myself. Although I am hoping that England, you know, can get to at least day five. Hopefully the rain will help them. But yeah, should be a great day down at Leek. So big thanks to Leek for getting Ryan Sidebottom on the pod. And please go down and support that day. Right, Jono, it's that time. It's the time for you to take control and talk us through yet another week of North Staff's action.
Oh,
don't sound too pleased, mate.
Crack on, mate.
We'll talk about you boys a little bit later, won't we?
Yeah, if we have to. right, as always, got to start at the beginning. Unless you want to swap it around a little bit, unless you want to start and work backwards.
Why not? Let's mix it up, mate. Do you want to start in Div 3?
Let's start in Div 3. As we dive into Division 3 then. So, Eccleshall, second 11, comfortable winners against Audley, second 11, knocking off. Audley's 129 all out for the loss, just four. Do you want to talk about the boys? Dare I ask?
I mean, I can do, mate. I mean, it's not going to be particularly pleasant. I don't think.
It
definitely won't take long, mate. I mean, I'm pretty sure that they were done before you guys had probably got into the first or second over, I think it was, of the game. They were done for about 4:05.
Yeah, 43 and a half overs game in total.
Not great, mate, I think it's fair to say. So the joys of, we were, Checkley won the toss, chose to field, fair enough. Not a good day. 85 all out and 26.5 overs. Azza opened the batting and got 47 of them, which tells you how well the rest of the lads did, I think it's fair to say. Ram, the only other man to make double figures, were 13. There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 ducks in there. And across them 5 ducks, they managed to last a whole total of 7, 8, 9 balls for, I think, 4 of them. And then one lad, Danny Ray, fair play to him, it was a 22-ball duck. So I guess at least he stuck around a bit. Ash Timchuk there with a golden quacker. Sorry, big lad, but, you know, have to mention it. And I do have to mention that Aid's dad got you out on Sunday. However, Aid's dad also got me out, so I can't say much. Doing the damage there with the ball. I'm told Niall Lovett and Clark Adderall, they only got 3 wickets between them, but bowled pretty well up top. And then Peter Applebaum with a 4 for and Dan Amos with a 3 for skittled the rest, basically. And then
Clark Adderall is the lad who has been in the first team, isn't he? I think the big lad.
Yeah, big lad, I'm told. Big lad for a young lad, isn't he? Tall, very tall. Yeah, and then knocked it off, just the one down Checkley. Morgan Rowe with 36. Tom Carrigan got out for 19. Chrissy Harrison loves bowling. Chrissy Harrison bowled. He's a tall lad, our skipper, and he bowls some quite good spin, to be fair, some good offies. And he loves bowling to a left-hander. And yeah, he got Tom Carrigan out, and he says he just wished he could bowl at left-handers all year, really. And then Ben Carrigan, 24. But yeah, a battering, I think it's fair to say. Some good young talent alongside some experienced old heads in the Checkley team who are doing well.
Fucking hell, mate. I expected that to take
about 10 seconds. I thought I'd be kind to Checkley, mate.
10 minutes later.
Want to be kind to Checkley and laugh at Big Lad getting a golden, mate. Sorry.
Oh, good. I'll carry on then. right. Cheadle, squeaky bum time against Crewe. Crewe 106 all out off in the 40th over. Cheadle knocked them out.
Knocked one out? Bloody hell.
I hear they did knock one out. Knocked them off 8 down. So a bit of a tight finish in the end for them. Hanford and Stone played out a really exciting draw. Read about this in the paper in the week. Hanford were invited to bat first, made the way to 184 for 9 off their overs. Really indebted to some taller to fail down the order with 69. Bailed them out, really. And then Stone, with an over extra, I might add, must have bowled the overs quite quickly. So they had 46 overs to chase rather than the normal 45. Could only make the way to 183 for 9. 30 for Liam Hickey, 57 for Jack Batchelor, and 20 for Jack Motley. But it took a bit of a rear guard, whether it was a rear guard action or going for the win in the end, I don't really know. But a great game, 14 points to Hanford, 11 points to Stone there in the end. Modishall seconds, comfortable winners against Hemi, 220, plays 166 all out. 83 for Tom Phillips, 56 for John Seabridge, 36 for John O'Wally. And Longton, in a decent game at the last result in the division. Longton seconds, beating Meeking seconds, bowling Meeking seconds out for 132. 31 for Tom Fox. Other than that, no one else passing 30. A few tight arses in the run chase there, knocking them off 8 down after 38 overs. 59 for Ryan Elwell. In my opinion, far, far too good to be playing in that division. Personally, but there you go. But if we have a look at the league table in Division 3, Modishall seconds, Power On at the top, Stone SP seconds, bring it up in seconds, and then there's a 15-point gap then to Checkley second 11, and then just a few more points there to Longton. So starting to be a bit of a three-horse race, unless the likes of Longton and Meekins can get themselves back into it over the next couple of weeks. Then down the bottom of the table, we've got Audley and now Crewe in the bottom two with 124 and 133. And the boys are just 5 points outside of that. And that also looks to be a bit of a three-horse race between the three of them. So who can keep their noses above water? That's the question in Division 3. Should we move on to Division 2? Do we have to?
Yes, mate, we do have to. I've just hammered all, lad, so you can... You can talk about what happened.
Right, okay. So, Barlaston had a bit of a batting blues. They were 92 all out, and also he did knock them off 7. Meerith also suffered with a bit of a case of the batting blues. They were 50 all out against Norton Nails, who knocked them off 4-3. Meerith just picking up the 1 point there. Great game by the sounds of it at Caverswall. Caverswall knocking off Port Hills 174-8, knocking them off 9 down and 41 overs, which seemed a good game. Silverdale comfortable winners against Roe Park, who were 154 all out, chasing their 203. Sandbach had little issue, knocking off Stafford's 116, knocking it off in 23 overs. I did watch the highlights of that on the live stream on Play Cricket, just because I'm a teacher and I'm bored and I've got nothing better to do. And then Bignall End, yeah, the boys, we lost out to Oakmoor again. That's twice the season they've done it, which is disappointing. But extra disappointing, I suppose, because we actually had them 89 for 9, I believe it was.
I mean, I turned up and it was 90 for 9, so yeah.
Yeah, so we bowled really well. Some questionable umpiring, I might add. But we did bowl pretty well.
That's no shock, mate. I saw which umpire you had.
A lad up the top batted almost all the way through for 45 for them and did a good job of trying to hold the innings together. And it was in the middle, really, there. We really took over and some lad came in at 10 and just absolutely blitzed it. 49 ball, 61, hit the ball everywhere, dropped him a couple of times, but he hit a clean ball, couple up and over the roof, 5 sixes in total. And the other lad at the other end just kept getting him on strike and nicking them all over the place and eventually got him up to 169, which we still thought was gettable. But obviously having someone 90 for 9, you're very disappointed there. And our run chase never really got going. They bowled well up front. Their pro bowled well. I think I was his only wicket, but he bowled very tight.
He looked very decent.
Some poor shot selection. Lack of application. Especially by the top order. Lower order, well, in the middle, nearly kind of got us going a little bit. Few teens, few 20s, but never quite got enough to. Never really kind of got going anywhere. And we ended up 109 all out, which was super, super disappointing. Situation in Division 2, table-wise. Seems again like a bit of a three-horse race up the top now between Sandbach, Norton Nails, and possibly Silverdale, who are a few more points behind. But they're starting to put a bit of distance between the group of them there. And then down at the bottom, we've got Meerith and Stafford propping up the rest. And we've got about Roe Park, 10 points to them, but we're talking 30, 40 point gap then to the likes of Oakmoor, ourselves, Barlaston, and Allsager and Caverswall. So a lot of making up to do with Meerith and Stafford over the next few weeks if they're to get themselves out of that situation. Disappointing, mate. I know you were there to watch for some of it, but very, very disappointing.
Yes, I mean, I enjoyed watching Ollie Horn look very good, to be fair. A few lovely shots. And I thought I was quite fancying you chasing it. I was a bit disappointed I'd got to go. And then a couple of hours later, I looked back at my phone and wasn't the run chase I was expecting. But fair play to that lad for Oakmoor. He certainly gave it a bit of a biff. I know he gave chances, but I guess he classed them as quite difficult chances. As much as I was giving seven bets for a drop catch. It was a full-length diving drop catch, so he did well getting hand on it.
There was two. You count them as drops. They either stick or they don't. I mean, a different day, I think one flies up in the air and he's out probably early, isn't he? But
yeah,
I think it's just self-critical when you've got a team 90 for 9. That's one of them days, I think.
We enjoyed spent the Sunday with the cricket badger himself, Mitch Edwards, and him and Adel enjoyed talking about how angry you can sometimes get. So Mitch was guessing that you may have been very, very angry at
Kettle was definitely on Saturday. When I was just looking for someone to bowl in the region of the stumps, that was kind of when I was getting at my angriest, I think.
Brilliant.
That was probably the most disappointing bit. Into Division 1 then. Ecclestone must have thought that they were behind the eight ball, really, at halfway. 130 all out against Blyth, but ended up bowling Blyth out for 91. Running out 40-run winners. Quite comfortable in the end. Elwith knocked off Leeds 147 quite comfortably, just a five down after 37 overs. Big result for Endon, who've been struggling of late. They posted 252 for six off their overs against Littlestoke, 81 for Kev Cofferton, 52 for Alex Bailey, and 35 for Andrew Sibley, in addition to 30 extras or so. And then Littlestoke ended up 71 all out.
Not good.
In response, no, not good at all. That's a 181-run victory for there for Endon, which gets them back on track after a rough few weeks for them. Audley won a big game at the top against Knipersley. Knipersley, 133 all out. Audley knocked them off for six. Damage for Audley was done by Ricardo Gordon, who was back in the team, not seen him much since he got injured, I believe it was, about halfway through the first half of the season. 4 for 20 off 8.2, well bowled that man. And then 2 for Rich Holloway, 2 for Jack Redmond, 2 for Will Rhodes as well. Not too many alarms for Audley, knocking them off 6 down after 43 overs. 39 for Will Rhodes and 29 extras chipping them in there as well. Wood Lane, big winners against Newcastle and Arsenal. 211 for Wood Lane, 100 for Dan Brearley. Really coming to their own the last few weeks, Wood Lane. And bowling Newcastle out for 100. Inside 40 overs is a great effort. 3 for Steve Norcup, 4 for Joe Mansell, and 1 for Levi Smith, and 2 for Omar Ali as well. Big win for Sandyford in what sounds like an absolutely unbelievable game. Sandyford, 113 all out after 36 overs against, well, many people's favourite for the league title, Hemi. 37 from Craig Lees, not out as well. A big innings there for Sandyford to get him to something to bowl at. 5 for 22 for Liam Banks. Hemeath were a run short in response. Sandyford sneaking home by a run. No one past 20 for Hemeath. 19 was your top score. Sorry, one person past 20. Darren Plant past 20. Other than that, extras and Andy Lees were your top scorers. 3 for Mohammed Naveed. 3 for Craig Lees, 3 for Owen Shaw, 3 for 13 for him off his 6.5 overs. Great spell. Big, big win for Sandyford that against a team that probably not expecting that. And probably cost Emmy
a chance of going away.
A chance of running away, yeah. Especially with Knipersley losing. So we've got Elwith, just put a bit of distance between them and Emmy now. They're 249 points, Hemeath 227 and Knipersley 222. And the rest of them have just caught up there with Knipersley and Hemeath losing. So you've got Ecclestone on 215 and Audley on 196, who won't count themselves out of it. Wood Lane, we just said there that they've had a great little run of games in the last few weeks. They've made their way up to sixth now with 187 points, looking quite comfortable indeed. I'd imagine it's still probably a three-horse race up at the top there between Elwith, Hemeath and Knipersley. But I bet you Ecclestone don't think they're out of it, and probably Audley as well. Down towards the bottom, Littlestoke still looking to pick up a couple more wins to get them back in touching distance after getting those wins the other week with 104 points. Blyth with 134 points. And then we've got Leeds and Endon with 151, 153, and Newcastle and Arts Hill with 159. So all three of those will be looking a little bit over the shoulder still at Blyth upcoming in the next few weeks. So we'll finish with the Prem this week then, eh?
Yeah, finish with the top.
Finish at the top. So Ashcombe Park recorded another win. I don't know how many that is in the last few weeks, but certainly they've turned a bit of tide since halfway, haven't they?
Definitely.
Certainly making it a lot tighter down at the bottom of the table, which we'll talk about in a sec. But Ashcombe Park, 47-run winners against Cheadle. Port Ashcombe, rain reduced, I believe, this game. Ashcombe made the way to 149 for 7 off their 48 overs. Cheadle in response, 102 all out. 30 for Haroon Mahmood, 29 for Phil Clowes. 3 wickets for Matt Goodwin, 2 for Austin Crump. But in response, Cheadle, other than 38 for Ali Khan and 29 for Matt Goodwin, not a lot to write home about. A lot of single figure scores there. In fact, everyone else was in single figures other than those two. Wicket shared round for Ashcombe Park, and a really, really big win. And just Plungey's Cheadle, who were top of the table at one point in time, don't forget. Just a little bit more precariously close to the bottom, which they'll be disappointed in. Big game, the big derby, the big rivals in the Premier Division, Meekins and Port Hill. Meekins batted first, made the way to 183 all out off 43. Port Hill obviously had a number of overs then to chase that, because their overs get passed on, and they ended up knocking them off. I believe it was two balls to go. Speaking to a couple of people who were there, 35 for Sam Moores and 45 for Pete Wilshaw, 32 for Paul Byrne in the Meekins innings. And then for Port Hill, 48 from Louis Allison, 38 from Matt Coxon, and it needed a nice, calm 18 not out and a 7 not out from Ben Cotton and Josh Lowndes to see them over in the 56th over, 9 down.
Got your money's worth there.
Definitely got your money's worth. But can I just throw it out there as well? Paul Byrne bowled 13 overs, 2 for 14, but only bowled 3 maidens. Now, I know you say only 3 maidens, but that means that he went for 14 off 10 overs, and they all had to be in separate. So he went for an average of 1.4 from those other 10 overs, which was a miserly spell of bowling. I noticed he did something similar for Staffs. I think it was the first innings of Norfolk's batting effort he bowled. I think he went for less than one and over, or only went for about one and over. Big result for Port Hill up at the top there. Leek, big winners against Checkley. Checkley, 144 for 8 off their overs. Leek knocked them off 8 down. Marischal, comfortable winners against Burslem. Burslem, 135 all out. Marischal knocking them off just 1 down inside 40 overs. And Stone SP as well, big winners against Bagnall. Bagnall, 116 all out. Stone knocking them off just 3 down. Table in...
You missed a game, mate, haven't you?
Have I missed a game?
I think so, mate. There's a Whitmore Longton.
I've not spoken about Whitmore Longton.
One of the top teams, Longton, got beat.
I thought that was quick, you know. I thought I was a bit quick. I thought, that's gone quick. I'm so sorry to Whitmore and Longton, especially Whitmore, who were at the betting of top of the table, Longton. Longton, 117 all out in their overs, really struggled to get going. 5-29 off the friend of the pod, Matt McCall, off his overs. Well bowled, that man, including 5 maidens. Whitmore knocked them off 5 down inside. 26 overs, 27 for Daniel Hussain, 29 for Mohammed Asif, and 24 for Jack Beach, breaking the back of that run chase. So really, really, really big win there for Whitmore against top of the table Longton, and Longton will be gutted about that one. So it's all getting very tight at both ends of the table in the Prem. So just 1 point separates the top two, less than 20 points separates the top three. So we've got Meekins on 218 points, Longton on 217 points, and then Port Hill still there in third with 199 points. Down at the bottom, it's all starting to tighten up a little bit here. So we've got Ashcombe Park, who've got themselves back within striking distance now. They were on 131 points with those 3 wins in the past 4 or 5 weeks. Leek, second bottom with 155 points. And Whitmore still keeping their head above water with 161 points. And that's including their 20-point penalty as well. So they, without that 20-point penalty, Whitmore would be quite comfortable in fifth position. And actually, probably with their 8 wins Whitmore have got, which is absolutely unbelievable. So they've got as many wins as Stone in fourth. They've got more wins than Port Hill in third. So Whitmore, without that points penalty, would have been much higher. Just shows how tight it is. Yeah. Level on points with Marischal, they are, with 161. Cheadle with just 162. And Bagnall with only 166 there. So Leek have essentially got 1, 2, 3, 4 different teams there within 11 points of each other. And Burslem not completely out of it, I suppose, with 177 points. So they're only 22 points ahead. So really there, we've got 6 teams within 1 result of each other, less than 1 result of each other, which... should make some exciting viewing in the last few weeks of the season.
Yeah, I think all divisions have still got plenty to play for, but yeah, the Prem and the relegation battle is one that could really start to stand out, I would say, with a few weeks to go. Star of the weekend this week, we had 4 nominations come in, so all 4 were put forward. we had Darren Hough put forward. He hit 141 of Sandiford 2's 182. We had William Mishingi for Alworth, who got 97 not out. Matt McCall for Whitmore, who got 5-29, as we've just spoken about. And Dan Brearley for Wood Lane for his 100 not out. The winner with 44% of the vote, I don't think it's any surprise, doing a bit of a bannerman, was Darren Hough with 141 for Sandiford 2's. That's a great effort. They did lose to Burslem 2's, but to get 141 out of your team's 182 takes some real doing. So fair play to that man. That's well batted. Good stuff. Just a quick little look ahead to next week's Prem games. Big, big, big derby going on. Big in the relegation battle. Ashcombe Park host Leek. What do we reckon, Jono? Think, who do you think's coming out on top in that one?
In Al Cheddington, or whatever they call it.
The Al Moreland, I don't know what you call it, mate.
It's got a name. Someone will probably.
Something like that. Yeah.
With the way Ashcombe Park playing, before last week, I'd have said maybe Ashcombe Park, Leek were on a bit of a downward spiral, but Leek picked up a big win last week, so I think that'll be a really good game. Really, really good game. I'd say that's probably the pick from next week, if I had to have a guess.
But who are you going to pick to win it, mate? That's the big question here. Stop sitting on the fence and...
Draw, mate.
Draw. Thought you'd go with that. Enjoy the splinters.
Rain-affected draw.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of rain-affected draws coming this week. Just looking through the fixtures, Beers on my host Cheadle. Checkley host Meekins, which is a big game at the top. Can Checkley pull off a bit of a shock and put Meekins under more pressure at the top? Longton host Bagnall. Longton will be hoping to take that top spot back. They're only 1 point behind. Modishull Stones, a big game for Modishull. Want to get themselves out of that relegation fight, you would say. And then Porthill versus Whitmore. I expect to be a really good game because although, as you say, Porthill are third, Whitmore, yes, they might be third from bottom, but they've won more games than Porthill, and I think... It'd be fair to say that they're probably a lot better team than the league position currently shows. So I wouldn't like to predict Port or Whitmore either, to be honest. Should be an interesting week. Let's just hope rain doesn't ruin it. Because I think it's fair to say, is it not, Jono, that the forecast is pretty poor?
Yeah, pretty grim for the next 3 days.
Pretty grim. Which will help England, hopefully, but may not help the North Staff's cricket fraternity to have much action this weekend, sadly. Right, I believe, Jono, unless you've got anything else that you want to bring up. I best mention it. We had a little bit of a Memorial Day for Graham Hall, who sadly passed away last year. Great bloke, great player from Wedgwood, stalwart of the club. We had a Memorial Day for him. We had Young Guns versus what we called the veterans or the legends. Young Guns won. Want that to be known, we won. But Aid was skipper of our Young Guns. On his return as a guest player, and he did it 35 not out off 11 balls, and there is still a pink ball perched beautifully on top of the clubhouse that he dispatched, and I know he would not let me in his absence not mention that happened, so just thought I'd throw it out there for the ginger one. I'm sure he's told you about it plenty, haven't he, mate? I'm sure he's been using it.
I've heard nothing about it, mate.
Honest, he hasn't been desperately trying to bat higher up the order or anything because of it, I'm sure.
I think his words to me last week after his duck, I might add, were, put me at number nine, and I'll bat like a number nine. So he is hoping that I don't know, I might promote him up the order just so he can't say that against me this week.
Brilliant. Well, I think that's us done. So please follow us, subscribe to us, review us, do all that, share us around. Please go and have a look at Woodstock, who support us. Please go and donate to Cry. And as we're talking about Cry, next week we should have a guest with us, and it's hopefully going to be Dan Hancock, obviously from Porthill, from Vite Sports, and also the key organiser of the Nathan Butler Memorial Day that is in aid of cardiac risk in the young. So hopefully we'll have Dan with us to talk about being an agent, talk about Porthill and local cricket, but also to talk about mainly about Cry and obviously the great Memorial Day that they'll be running. So hopefully our listeners can go and support that. But that's us done for the week. So, Jono, go well at the weekend, mate. I'm hoping for a biggie end win to cheer you and dude up. because you weren't the happiest bunnies on Saturday night. And to everyone, yeah, the kettle was on, as you say. And to everyone out there who's listened, go well at the weekend. Hopefully we get some good cricket. Hopefully, though, the rain comes and saves England. And we'll see you all next week for another podcast where I'm sure we are going to be lamenting England's really, really shit red ball batting. Cheers. See you next week. Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.